Music, among other things.
Music among other things.
Music among other things.
The way we had all of our equipment set up was how the Beatles set up for Abbey Road, you know, things like that. Not even just the tape, it was like the microphones he was using. Like, Lauren's so specific about the details of, like, you know, when the Beatles did the White Album, this is the microphone they used for John Lennon's vocals and things like that.
All right, MEAT episode 10. We are officially in double digits. Can you believe it, man? Very pleased to say we are joined by Willie J. Healy this week, who came through to talk about his album Twin Heavy, which is dropping on Friday the 7th of August 2020 on Yala Records. I'm not just saying it because he's on the podcast, but it's honestly one of my favourite albums of the year so far. Beautiful record, amazing songwriting, which was lovingly created with Lauren Humphrey, who's worked with The Last Shadow Puppets and Florence and the Machine. I've dropped a link to his online store where you can purchase a record. I thoroughly recommend you doing it, purely based on the quality, but also to support independent musicians. He's also just announced a run of dates for next year, so hit up the link for that one too. I'm not the only one raving about Woody J. Healy. He's got fans everywhere. Alex Turner was recently spotted adorning his merch in Paris, which we get into a little bit, as well as Jamie T. So in the episode, we talk a lot about 70s music or the 70s style of production. We talk about Woody's boxing past, his collection of Neil Young t-shirts, doppelgangers, and much more. And yeah, 10 episodes, so it's a bit of a milestone. So thank you to everybody who's been tuning in every week. And if it's your first MEAT, then there's 10 episodes that you can go and check out. Make sure you like and subscribe. We are on Instagram and Twitter at MEATPod, and hope you enjoy the chat. Cheers, guys.
Yeah, this week's been a bit crazy. Like, I know it sounds really silly, but I've had the album, or my album's due to come out in a week, and like literally just completely forgot that was a thing that was going to happen. And all of a sudden, like, all of this vinyl's turning up at my house, and I'm getting messages like, can you we need you to sign all 500 copies within a day. And I'm like, oh my God.
how did that fall off your radar?
I think because it's been such a long time coming.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like everything had been done for the album because we finished it like last year. And then it was like radio silence in terms of like, oh yeah, you've got this here and this there. And then all of a sudden on Monday, it was like, bang, you've got like all of these interviews, all of this like vinyl needs to be signed. And to top it all off, I just started working at a greengrocer's as well.
All right.
Yeah. Jeez. Just to keep me busy, you know, in lockdown. And like, I feel really bad because the guy was like, what days can you do? I'm like, you know what? At the minute I'm pretty free. And I started last week, and then he asked me on Sunday, like, what can you do this week? And I was like, basically every day. And then it gets to Monday, and I'm like, by the way, I can't work any days this week.
you could maybe sign the vinyl behind the counter. Although I don't know what you've got to do with COVID-19, like, restrictions and stuff.
Yeah, it's not very chill in there either. Like, it's non-stop, like, veg sales. So I don't think I'd have a chance to do it. Yeah, so it's been mayhem, but I'm enjoying being in Bristol.
Where were you before?
I was from a place called Carterton, which is kind of between Oxford and Swindon. Yeah, it's like a small town, really. And my girlfriend studied here in Bristol and stayed here and she's been here for a few years. So I Yeah, just got here now. Nice. Really.
Bloody lovely place to be.
Yeah, I love it. I love it out that way. Yeah. So were you sort of at your family home before when you moved in with flatmates? Is that the sort of way around it's gone?
No, I was in my family home with my parents and a couple of dogs.
Nice.
Which was good because I had like a little home studio set up in their garage. But yeah, you know, you can't be living like that forever, sadly. So now we're just in a little studio flat in Bristol. So no flatmates. which is quite good.
No dogs?
No dogs, just a little cat.
Oh, that's all right.
Yeah.
What's so that called?
Cat's called Baby.
Cracking name.
Yeah, she's ferocious as well, so it's quite an ironic name.
Yeah, I've got a little sausage dog called Rita. She's an absolute beast. Everyone's like, oh, what a cute dog. And she's going, rah, rah. He goes mental. A bit scared of people.
Yeah, but, man.
Oh, I love that.
We do this thing on the podcast called Recently Added. So it's sort of just like a candid telling of whatever has been recently added on your Apple Music or Spotify. Have you got any songs to hand?
Yeah, I've been... it's quite eclectic. It's a dangerous question. I recently added a Brian Eno album. Don't know if you know it, called... I think it's called Apollo.
Right, I think I heard about this on... I listened to the Adam Buxton podcast last week.
Right.
I talked to Ed O'Brien from Radiohead, and they... went quite deep in it, and I think I might have saved it last week to listen to, but I haven't got around to it.
Yeah, it's good. It's quite like, you know, it's quite ambient, so you wouldn't really like put it on for a casual, like you got some friends over, put Apollo on. But I put it on at night, like if I can't sleep, I put it on. And actually, it's got some massive like bangers on it that I didn't know were even Eno tracks, like big things that I've seen, like, you know, songs I know from film soundtracks.
Oh, wow.
So I added that. That's like a whole album I've added. Another thing I've added recently was a Wu-Tang Clan album.
Nice.
And I'm like really late to the Wu. which is quite embarrassing, actually, because, like, you know, I'm like, oh yeah, check out this song to my friends, and they're like, dude, what's wrong with you? Like, 36 yeah. Chambers is a classic, apparently. So I've been sessioning that pretty hard.
Sweet.
In terms of like new stuff, there's a new, is it Karangabin?
Oh yeah, Karangabin, yeah.
Karangabin, yeah. I can't
think
really
have that, right?
Yeah, but I've been enjoying that. It's been really good.
Sweet.
And a couple of podcasts, actually. I really like a podcast called Last Podcast on the Left.
Oh, cool. What's that going to?
It's like a comedy murder podcast.
Sweet.
Which is quite entertaining. And then I really love Atletico Mints.
I'm so into that.
Yeah. But they haven't put any episodes up for a while, but I've still kind of saved a few.
Yeah. Have you been keeping up with the Train Guy videos?
Oh, yeah. It's funny because that's kind of how I discovered the podcast. And now I've gone like full psycho mode. And when people are like, do you know Train Guy? I'm like, yeah. Do you know Train Guy? That's like just one of Mortimer's like 12 amazing characters. Check out the podcast.
Amazing. Have you got any favourite characters from that?
I really love Steve McLaren.
Oh yeah,
he has a pet snake called Casper, I think.
Yeah.
There's another one. I'm not sure. The funny thing is, I'm not that like up to date on football, like knowledge.
Same thing with me here. I don't know anything about it, but
yeah.
Love the podcast. You don't really need to know football to like it.
Yeah, so I think there's a whole another level of comedy to it that I just it's going straight over my head. But there's another guy that's like obsessed with a good old fashioned English fight. And he goes like, do you think you could fight me in a fight, like a fair fight?
I can't remember. Like, I feel like Aaron, you're probably the most football savvy among us.
Yeah,
but you haven't listened to it, have you, probably?
I haven't probably listened to it. The only one I know that is obviously because I'm a Fulham supporter and you let me know about Roy Hodgson, who's like one of our best.
Oh, the Warhammer.
Yeah, the Warhammer. And it actually does sound pretty like him. Like, yeah, what I've heard, the snippets that you sent, it's actually uncanny, yeah.
He's livid, isn't he? You like Roy. They always paint him out to be really angry.
This crazy character, yeah. And he's just really like placid 70-year-old if you meet him. Yeah.
And there's this other guy, what's the other guy? Peter Beardsley. It's just heartbreaking.
Yeah. He's like really slow monologues about his wife and stuff.
Yeah, she hates him. And he's kind of spends all of his, he spends his time just staring at bin bags floating past the house. Which I love.
So good.
Yeah.
Rich, what about your recently added? You got anything?
Yeah, I've got a song called Wherever I Lay My Hat by Paul Young.
Oh, nice. That title sounds familiar for some reason.
Yeah, I like it because of the bass on it. It's Pino Palladino, who's like arguably one of the best bassists ever. And he used to use a Music Man Stingray, fretless.
Oh, hell yeah.
He used to have like chorus and a couple of effects on it. And it was like this iconic bass sound in the 80s. So he was asked to play on like everything in that era. And this is just one of those songs that I picked up when I was sort of delving deep into Pino Palladino, figuratively. Nice. Into his information, not into him. it's really cool.
Sick. What about you, Aaron?
Yeah, I've gone pretty weird, actually. I don't know why, but I've always been kind of interested in, like, you know, that like surf rock sound. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So I found a couple of playlists on Spotify and just been listening to random bands, and yeah, like obviously everyone would normally think like Beach Boys and all that kind of stuff, but there was this band called the Alalars, and I think they're from like California. They're pretty like they're a modern band, like they're around these times, and it's just that kind of real catchy, jangly kind of instrumental surf rock stuff. So I've just been listening to them. It's really good. Yeah, really, really good.
Oh, sick.
I think I know that band. Like, I just discovered them myself, actually.
Yeah, I think they're like on a couple of those. You know, those like Spotify playlists you just put on to set the mood. And I think they're on a couple of them. And they're really good. It's like just real, kind of like that Krungbin vibe, you know, just kind of really good instrumental guitar sounds and stuff.
Yeah.
But they're really cool.
Nice. One of my recently added is I've been listening to that the new Jarvis Cocker project called Jarv Is.
Yeah.
And I got like the vinyl delivered the other day. But there's a track on there called Save the Whale, the opener, which is really good. And he did this quite cool live stream show from a cave up north. Like this whole thing is about, I think he was really influenced by going to some ancient cave in the UK. And it was like the oldest cave paintings you can see. So he just basically went really deep on that and sort of, I think he originally wasn't going to bring out an album. He was just going to play live shows and let the sort of songs simmer as they play live. But then somebody talked him into actually making it into a project, which sounds amazing if you guys haven't checked it out yet. But he did this like Q&A with Rough Trade last week, which I joined. And we sort of joined it and didn't really know what the setup was. We were like, oh, are we just going to be on like camera with him or whatever? And he literally like just pops up on the screen frozen, and I just heard him say the name Sean, and I was like, wait, can he see me? I saw that wasn't actually the case. It was just like 300 people on mute and him just talking with a journalist. But you know, you just get freaked out and you're like, I started talking to Jarvis and I'm just like,
oh my gosh.
And I just proper panicked for a minute there, but but it was Starstruck. It was great.
Did I see he had a stuffed crab on the wall?
Yeah, it's like a stuffed crustacean. Like, he has a house that you can imagine Jarvis Cocker living in, like a proper Wes Anderson style sort of thing. He had like this really sort of gothic chandelier and like a stuffed crustacean. Is it's a sort of a weird vibe.
Wow.
It's cool though. It's cool. We were talking about creative merch a few weeks back, and I sort of thought I'd seen it all, and then I saw you brought out the Paint Your Own Woody J. Healy, which is coming out with the vinyl, right?
Yes, yeah.
So did you have to do like 3D scanning stuff for that? Or like, how did that idea come about?
I don't, like, I'm not that clued up on the tech side of it, but they did, they based it all from the album cover. And I think for some unknown reason, my manager, Tim, already had some photographs with the back of my head. which is a small miracle in its, you know, it's in its own right. But so I think they basically just kind of they 3D printed them based on photographs, and they look really funny. Like, I think it's a great idea, I've never seen anyone else really do that.
Definitely not.
It might be the best idea in the world or the worst idea in the world.
I think that's always where the best merch comes from. It toes the line between really great and really bad. But I think that's an awesome idea.
Are people supposed to paint it as it's spinning around on the vinyl?
That's a good idea.
That could be cool.
Yeah, like a little concept. I mean, I guess they can do what they want with them, really. Like, they could dip them in bleach, or they can try and paint them like the album cover, or...
Yeah.
But I do like the idea of people trying to paint them while they spin. Might ruin the vinyl, though.
I mean, hopefully nobody does some weird, like, voodoo doll shit with it.
Yeah, well, I start kind of, like, curling over as I'm walking down the street, like, paint. Like, yeah, slowly dying.
Yeah. Let's hope that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I hope not. I'll let you keep. I'll keep you posted on that.
The merch is really good, and also I saw that Alex Turner was photographed wearing your tee in Paris recently, which is
amazing.
There's a lot of power in the tee. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
As in, I think I remember when like Harry Styles was wearing a swim deep tee, which was like a really deep cut. But got me thinking about, you know, there's the sort of like designer band tees, and
yeah,
you know, people would sort of buy it and they probably wouldn't know who the artists are and stuff.
Yeah.
I actually found this video of this guy who went around like a heavy metal sort of festival. I saw these guys, saw these people like wearing the tees and went up and said, oh, could you name like three Slayer songs? And he just
couldn't do it.
It's so good. Yeah. And it's almost like band allegiance signaling. You know, like virtue signaling? Sort of like that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I imagine people have been caught out like big time before.
Yeah, I've got a friend who's really militant when it comes to, like, why are you wearing that? Like, do you even like that? I personally don't, you know, I don't really, like, I think if you like a T-shirt, then get it. But I've got this Grateful Dead T-shirt, and I like two Grateful Dead songs, but their merch is amazing.
They've got a massive, like, merch game going on, isn't it?
It's big time. But every time I put the T-shirt on, I'm a bit like, is this right? Am I allowed to wear this?
So you say you know two songs.
Well, yeah, I know more than two, but I only really like two songs. Like, I don't really love Grateful Dead, but they're one of those bands where if you like wear a Grateful Dead T-shirt and some other Grateful Dead fan sees you, they're like, yeah, bro, like Grateful Dead.
Yeah, and you're like,
yeah, not really.
Yeah, Grateful Dead are one of those bands where, you know, just the catalogue is so deep, you just don't know where to start. And I was sort of thinking about the same thing with Neil Young, because I really love Neil Young and I'm aware you're quite a big fan.
Yeah.
I think I saw you maybe sporting like two or three different Neil Young tees in one of your videos, like the fashion one, I think.
Yeah, I'm glad you noticed that. Actually, you're the only person that's mentioned that. I thought it would make waves in the Neil Young world, but it didn't. How many Neil Young T-shirts can I get into one video?
That sounds like a hell of a challenge. Yeah, I love him. I love Neil Young. But, yeah, again, I still feel like I've only sort of scratched the surface with him. Like, there's so many releases. Yeah. It's like, Aaron, are you into it much? Because I feel like you'd be into that 70s sort of vibe, for sure.
That's what I mean. Like, he's one of those people that's on my list, but I've just never really got around to giving him, you know, like a big chance in my life. And it's kind of what you just said about there, like the Grateful Dead, it's like, it's kind of daunting. It's like, where do I start? Do I start on like the fucking greatest hits album, or, you know, a specific album? So I probably need someone like you to kind of guide me into it.
I think that's it. Like, it's a bit, I'm a bit like that with Smiths. Not that they've got a huge catalogue, but I'm kind of like, oh, there's like some really big stuff here that people live their life by.
So we can do a massive swap here, because I'm a massive Smiths fan, but not Neil Young. So we can...
Really?
Yeah, we can have a nice little exchange, yeah.
Perfect.
I was thinking, actually, now that we're talking about you having a Neil Young tease, can you name three Neil Young songs?
I'm a massive faker.
I'm joking.
No, I mean, I could name you thousands and it would just be very boring.
Yeah, no, I'm joking. Don't worry. your album, you said it was wrapped last year, right?
Yeah, like last spring.
Oh, wow, that's a long time.
Yeah, it's been, I think classic, you know, like the classic thing of you finish an album and then the press and everything kind of, you know, labels want a good chunk of time.
Yeah.
On it. Yeah, so it's been...
that kind of kills it for you, in a way? Does it make it less exciting?
Yeah, it makes it less... it makes it kind of feel more... you feel more detached. Like, if someone says, oh, I really like that, I feel a bit like, yeah, I'm kind of over it now. Not over it in a way that I'm not proud of it, but naturally, yeah. I've always found that I move on quite quickly. Like, I think that's probably a healthy thing, to not dine out on it. So I'll finish it, and then once it's, like, finished... I immediately think, like, right, what do I have to do next? Like, what's next? So it makes it almost seem like irrelevant.
I guess also people might see your progress doesn't go in real time with the rest of the world, you know what I mean? Like, you might have written something else that you really love, and then what you consider to be older or something that you've improved on, you know, that sort of doesn't match up, which must be quite annoying, I guess.
Yeah, that's kind of, you hit the nail on the head. Like, that's the big thing, is that I get really excited about new songs, and you know, to think that, like, I was listening to one of the songs on the album, and I'm like singing about being 22, and now I'm 26.
Yeah.
And I was just like, this, sometimes it's just tracks get lost, or like takes ages to actually get things out through labels.
Completely, yeah.
That it does.
And also, I guess 6 wouldn't work with a rhyme scheme.
Like, now, like, if we sing it live, I'm like, I was 22 instead of like 22. But that I think is the issue. It's like, when it comes to, like, this week is great. Like, I'm glad I'm busy, but it's also a bit like, oh, like, I don't want to play those songs anymore. And the album's not even out.
Yeah.
You know, sure. I'm like, oh, I want to play these new songs. I've got another album ready in my head. But, you know, it's a good problem to have, I suppose.
Definitely. I mean, this album is really great. I've been listening to it, like, over the past few days, and I think I'm the only one out of us lot who's heard the like, whole thing. But,
Yeah,
really front to back, man. Great songwriting. It sounds great as well. And, I mean, you must be proper chuffed with it.
Yeah, I'm really proud of it. And it's the first time I've really had a producer on board in a big way, and, you know, I really collaborated with the band as well, and I think it's benefited from that. And
nice.
Yeah, I've had this time in between finishing it and then not listening to it for a year and listening back to it, I am really happy with it. And,
oh, that's quite nice. I guess sometimes when you're sitting recording as well, like, I don't know how involved you are in the production side of it, but definitely when you're mixing stuff, you can listen to it, like, you know, 200 times a day for like 2 weeks, and then you're sick of it, aren't you?
Yeah, you just become kind of numb to, like, you know, the bits that would excite you when you wrote it.
Yeah,
you listen to it over and over again, and it does take the kind of excitement out of it. And so it's nice, you know, to listen back and go, like, wow, I don't even remember it sounding this cool at the time.
That's great. Yeah. That's really good.
Yeah, which is, you know, I'm glad it's like that and not the other way around, where you're like, oh my God, what was I thinking? Like, yeah. Sounds awful.
There's real 70s sound and influence on it as well. You work with Lauren Humphrey, is that right?
Yeah, that's it.
And was there any, I mean, because you guys recorded to tape, as I understand, so was there any, you know, sort of production touch points or any records you wanted to emulate in particular? Because it sounds so good with your songwriting as well. Real good match.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, all that kind of... solo George Harrison stuff. Me and Lauren immediately kind of clicked when it came to references and albums we liked, and actually he turned me on to so much music that I'd never listened to, that really like not even just the tape, it was like the microphones he was using. Like, Lauren's so specific about the details of, like, you know, when the Beatles did the White Album, this is the microphone they used for John Lennon's vocals and things like that, things that I had never really, I wouldn't say wouldn't care about, but I'm a bit more rough and ready and less kind of interested by the science behind things and the kind of mathematics of it all. Whereas Lauren's super like, this is the exact room setup that they use, you know, to do like Dark Side of the Moon or something. So yeah, it was just like constant references, like, the way we had all of our equipment set up was how the Beatles set up for Abbey Road, you know, things like that.
Incredible.
It's super nerdy, you know, like you got to read so much stuff to work out how those things kind of came about. And that's really where Lauren came into it and was just like, you know, smashed it. And
I love that though. How did you mark up the drum kit then? I've always been trying to get that sort of 70s drum sound. Yeah,
well, they barely use any mics, basically. Yeah. Like, I think we used 3, if not 4 at most, microphones on the drums. And then it was quite a kind of transitional period for my friend Mike, who played the drums on the album, because... obviously I won't go into it too much and like bore everyone, but with tape, like all of the effects were basically printed on the stems, like going in. So instead of like affecting things after you've recorded them, we were affecting them on the way in. So there was like all this compression and stuff on the kit. So when we were playing in the room, you know, like there'd be 3 mics on the drums, but in your headphones, they would sound huge. So, like, Mike was just, like, tapping everything. It looked like he was barely touching the drums. And I think it took him a while to, you know, get used to that. But, yeah, it's, like, 3 microphones. And then the song Fashion, I think that might have been 1 or 2 microphones just, like, above the drums.
Oh, cool.
Sick.
Just that
I once got a really good... sound. So I was working with my mate Rob, who used to play in a band, and the best drum sound we ever got was an SM57 in a glass underneath the snare drum, and that was just like the perfect thing. We did it for a demo, and then we went to record the tune properly, and we were like, nah, that drum just doesn't sound anywhere near what we got it with that.
Oh, really?
That's insane, isn't it? Like, we had lots of that as well, like little things that happened that on paper were like, no, you just wouldn't do that. Like, we realized after 4 days of recording that the microphone we had put on the bass amp had fallen off the stand and was effectively like pointing like in the opposite direction. And we put it back to where it should have been, and it just didn't sound as cool. So we ended up like leaving the bass mic somewhere in the middle of the room.
Yeah, it's all these like happy accidents that lead to it, I guess.
As Bob Ross would say.
So did you record quite live then with a band, or you know, what was the sort of approach to that? Because I guess all that 70s stuff, you know, fired up of having quite a live sound to it.
Yeah, it was, like, other than the vocals and a couple of we overdubbed like strings and a couple of synths here and there.
Yeah.
But the actual rhythm tracks and, you know, I would say 90% of the track would have all been from the live session. So, yeah, it was all live. And
incredible.
Yeah, it's the first time I've really done that, like, properly, you know, like, not just kind of faked it. It was really exciting. And, like, I think compared to the other stuff I've released, it does feel like it's got a lot more life in it, to me anyway. Mm.
Yeah, it sounds so good because of it. And Lauren Humphrey came over. Is he American?
Yeah, so Lauren's, he's from Cali, but he's living in New York at the minute.
Oh, I see. Okay, because I think I read in like one of the press releases it was sort of weird for this Californian guy to be in
Eastbourne.
Yeah. What did he think of it, or did he have any like hot spots to show him? I don't really know Eastbourne too well.
Well, but. Lauren, he's kind of, by trade, he's a drummer, so he's toured a lot in the UK, but he had never been to Eastbourne. He loved it. Like, and actually, not to kind of take too much shine away from Eastbourne, but Lauren stayed with me in my parents' house in Carterton, like this small town. Yeah. It's like the armpit of the Cotswolds. And nice. He turned up like, you know, Lauren's full rock star like guy, you know, compared to people in Carterton. Like, Lauren turned up in a dead stock like 70s flared suit with like just the most cliche like rock man from the 70s with like these like cowboy boots on, and he's in a town where people are all in like cotton still and wearing Air Max, you know. It was like it was surreal, and he was walking around with like all of these natural smelling like oud, like fragrant. The man smells amazing. And I could just see people like looking at him almost like they'd never seen like that kind of thing before.
Yeah.
And it was a similar vibe in Eastbourne. It was like he'd been teleported from a different planet.
Wow.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
So did you find out the secret or the musk?
Yeah, it's oud.
Oh, oud.
Yeah.
What is that? Is that like a fragrance? Or?
I think it's like a... I need to ask him. He's quite guarded about it. It's,
I would be as well.
It's. Yeah. I think it's effectively like something you pair with another smell, but it's like a natural thing that you put on your... I mean, I don't know.
Right.
To cut a long story short, I don't really know what it is, but it makes you smell really nice.
Links Africa with Nivea for men.
Yeah, that's where I'm at.
A hot combo.
Just an SM57, an XLR lead that hangs from heaven. I plugged it into my instrument, and out came a spirit. I found a preset used by Lennon, hidden in Revolutions 2-7. I connected it to my microphone, and out came a spirit. The beautiful sound of the 70s, a formula where less is truly more. Just plug it in and play.
I was watching your True Stereo video. That's such a good video, and like such a great idea for it as well. Where was that shot? I couldn't quite work it out whether it was in the UK or not. I assumed it was somewhere else.
It was shot in right up on the kind of north west kind of coast of Scotland.
Right.
I might be pronouncing this wrong, but in a place called Loch Maire.
Right.
Yeah, it was insane up there. It was such an amazing place to be able to go and visit. Really wild and like rugged, and like we met a couple of locals and stuff, and it was like stepping back in time.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was somewhere in Scotland.
And that video sort of basically finds you hunting down your double, your doppelganger.
Yeah.
I was wondering, did you like try and find a lookalike at all, or was it just always the idea? Because I always think that would be a really weird process if, you know, you're looking for a lookalike of yourself.
That's like a music video in itself, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, it was really atrocious, actually. Like, my friend came along and he's, like, twice the height of me. You know, he's got a completely shaved head. We couldn't look more different. So we had to work really hard to make sure that, I don't know if you remember, but I've got, like, this head, like, kind of scarf snood thing on.
Yeah.
And like a big hat, and basically the only reason I'm wearing it is just to kind of hide my not showcase how different me and my friend look. It was a real pain, actually, because it was freezing up there and everything got wet, and I was walking around with this like really cheap fake like beaver hat on, and a soaking wet snood, and like it was very funny. But we should have budgeted for a lookalike, that would have been amazing.
So was that your mate being dragged down the hill?
Yeah, it's my friend Lucas, and to be honest, like, he came along for the trip, and I didn't want to tell him like why he was really there. And it got to it, and he had already had quite a tough day, because he had like quite a severe case of like vertigo all of a sudden out of nowhere. He's like, I can't do it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, over a walkie-talkie, because he was like miles off in the distance dancing on the side of this like kind of cliff. And the director, Joe, was like, what did he just say? And he's like, I can't do it. And I was like, nah, he's joking. Like, he's never done anything like that. And I was like, he's joking, don't listen to him. And he's like, this hill, I can't do it. So he'd already had like a real day of it. And then it got to the bit where it was like, right, now, Will, you drag Lucas about. And I had to act surprised. Like, I didn't know, like, oh, okay. And I remember him, like, he instantly just sussed me out. And it was really miserable because he's... Oh, wow. He's really like big. He's like 6'2" and I'm like 5'10".
Yeah.
Like he's just a big guy and like I could barely move him. So we were in the snow for a while before I actually managed to actually, you know, like drag him successfully. And the rope was like tied around his, at first they were like tied around his wrists.
Oh.
And we tried it and I was like pulling the guy's arms out of his sockets, you know. So yeah. it was really brutal. It was not nice.
That sounds like a rough day for you, mate. Being kidnapped, being put in a music video, being dragged around,
yeah.
and also you're like, come look a bit more like me, a bit more like me.
Yeah, could you just stoop down a bit more? Yeah, we had to have a little pep talk afterwards. I was like, look, I really appreciate you doing this for me.
Yeah. Like if one of my mates asked me to be on a music video, I'd be well up for it because you think about the glamour and you know having your own trailer and stuff, and then I'd gonna get kicked down a hill. Yeah.
Yeah, no glamour on that shoot. It was all pain. And that's the Burnley way.
Worth it. Worth it.
Yeah. So your friendship's still intact?
Yeah, he's been a bit quiet lately, actually. I think maybe like he's had a delayed reaction to it. Like it's
right.
The more he's thought about it with time, the more he's gone, wait, he knew the whole time. That's why he had me there.
Yeah.
There's some trust issues there.
Yeah, so I've got to make it up to him. Maybe one day he doesn't release music, but I'll give him an opportunity to just drag me around.
That sounds like a good trade-off, to be fair. So also understand that you have a background in boxing, amateur boxing, and tell us a bit about that. Like, how did you start out? Was that as a kid?
Yeah, so I started quite casually when I was 10 because I used to really like football, but I was, for whatever reason, I think I just wasn't very fit or I'd get really out of breath. I think, I don't know why. So my dad's cousin owns a boxing gym. And
yeah.
I think basically my dad was just waiting for any opportunity to take me there. I started when I was 10 and then I kind of just, ended up really liking it, and I didn't stop until I was 17. So I did it for a good 7 years, kind of pretty full on.
Wow.
Because
Aaron, you had a
same kind of thing. Like mine wasn't for that long. It was, I probably started it about the same age maybe, and then stopped like soon into high school. Yeah, but it's just so intense. I remember really loving it. Like I was football mad as well, really loving it. And then it was that time period where it was like, you're too old for the juniors.
Yeah.
You're too young for the adults. And I was doing I was going to the adults training. It was just, it was just mental. Like the amount of training, I don't think a lot of people realize like the amount of training you have to put in. And then also like, you know, do, like play football with your mates and then do your fucking homework. And it's really intense. I remember coming home from school, from training, like just absolutely knackered, do you know what I mean? And I was like, I can't do this much.
Yeah, it consumes like your everything you do, doesn't it? Like I had the same thing really. Like I'd be the good thing was is that because I got so into it, I don't know if you had this, but it meant that my parents didn't make me do homework anymore because they were like, oh well, you're going boxing every night, so you know we can't expect you to do all this homework.
I makes up for it. Yeah, no, yeah. I know what you mean. They was never really like crazy hot on the homework thing. It was always a trust thing, but I feel like I got away with more than and it was kind of a family thing as well, do you know what I mean? Like it's like my dad and his dad and his brothers and stuff, so they, it's like a proud thing, do you know what I mean? That you've followed in their footsteps.
Yeah.
So you probably, there's a bit more leniency. Yeah, totally.
So as I understand it, I think you mentioned it informs, you know, everything you do. I mean, is that just in the attitude and dedication you need to it when you're actually you know, gunning for it at that time?
Yeah, I think, you know, like we just said, it's so intense and it's such a roller coaster. You can, you know, just the work rate and the commitment that you need to do something like that. And also the, it would really scare me. Like when I had boxing matches, it scared the life out of me, like every time. You know, I never got used to it. I had like 42 amateur fights and not once was I like not terrified before I went in.
Yeah.
And like I was also really not very confident when I was young. So kind of after starting boxing and meeting people from all different walks of life and, you know, people that are from prison or other people that like have been bullied and like all these different cultures that end up in one place.
Totally.
Like I found that it just changed my whole life and I could feel comfortable all of a sudden, you know, around nearly every type of person that I would come across at that point in my life. And
yeah,
it hasn't really left me. And the feeling of like, you know, I was a small, like little ginger guy that looked like Annie. Like, you know, I was his prime candidate to be bullied, but because I got into boxing, it just, you know, no one ever messed with me because I thought I was really tough and I probably wasn't, you know, I was still tiny.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've never felt like I have to prove myself in that way, you know, after starting boxing. Yeah. It's just given me this, like, kind of confidence that I don't think I would have ever have gotten from anything else.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so different to music, but in a sense, it's like, I always, like, kind of sum it up in such a goofy way, but it's like, you know, getting punched in the face in front of like some angry drunk punters is quite scary, but like generally at a gig, that's not hopefully going to happen. Do you know what I mean?
Hopefully not.
But after having such an extreme experience with that, then coming to music, it just feels like a holiday.
Yeah,
completely. Yeah, completely. Were you sort of at the stage where you were having walk up music?
Oh yeah, I mean like yeah, but not. You know, not pro stuff. They kind of just do it to for a bit of fun.
So could you choose like the track?
Yeah, I think I always, yeah, but they always had like, it was some corny like DJ guy
gotcha.
Who had his own disc drive and he was like, right, is there anything on this you fancy? And it was always like Rocky soundtrack or like, you know,
I will survive.
Yeah, exactly. So I always ended up with like, I have the tiger, it's the king of the fight.
Classic.
Like shaking in the corner.
Yeah, that's got to be a classic, The Eye of the Tiger, I think. Aaron and Rich, have you had any thoughts about what your walkout music would be?
God, it's hard.
Or did you have any, Aaron?
No, no, really. No, I don't think mine was... established. This sounds like a proper gig, these boxing shows. Yeah. I didn't have a dodgy hard drive. No, not really. But I've actually thought, like, whenever you watch the boxing, and nowadays, you know, in the big heavyweight fights, it's such a show and a parade.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like lost its touch a bit. But you do like think, oh, that's a tune. I don't actually think of boxing more. I think of the darts more. Because everyone is so fucked and they play the best tune and you come out to them and everyone's just like loving it. Do you know what I mean? More than the boxing. So I think the arts tunes more. I think, I don't know. Yeah, there's so many. I always love Bittersweet Symphony, you know, but
that's pretty classic.
I just love like bowling out to that, pretending I'm fucking Richard Ashcroft.
Yeah, quite deep. Like you've gone for the deep route.
Yeah, that really, yeah. No, definitely.
And quite classy, you know, the sort of strings.
Yeah, a bit of string action.
Okay,
you've got all like the hard rock, you know, do you know what I mean? Like Led Zeppelin, like Immigrant Song or something.
Yeah.
You can have it, you know what I mean? But,
yeah.
I don't know, yeah. There's so many.
I quite like the idea of doing something quite serene. You know, like Albatross. I wonder how that was sort of go down.
Scream Marks and Spencers at your opponent. You know what I mean?
I love it when people like do the underdog thing and they just come out like to no music and it's like the Undertaker's coming out or something. You know what I mean? It's absolutely terrifying when you see someone like pacing towards the ring.
Oh wow!
Without a track.
Silence.
Yeah,
just pure silence, as if to say like I'm above all of this.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's terrifying. Rich, have you got one?
Oh. I'd have to do silence because I've got nothing to back it up. So hopefully they just get scared beforehand. I've never been punched in the face and I don't really intend to.
Yeah, hopefully not, mate. I was wondering whether boxing was a discipline that crossed over into the music world much. And I was reading an interview with Paul Banks of Interpol, and he's really into it. And he's got this new band called Muzz. But I was reading this interview with him, and he's isolating in the Scottish Highlands and doing some really intense boxing training. And that sounds like some real Braveheart shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I quite like the idea that these sort of early noughties indie stars getting really hench for these like 20th anniversary shows. You know, like this is like when lockdown happened, you know, people were training up and stuff like that. Like Julian Casablanca's coming out next year, just hench as hell.
Yeah.
And you know, like the quads just busting the skinny jeans and shit.
Just I'd love to gagging for someone to swing at in.
Start with, yeah.
Yeah. Come on. Yeah. But I found this list of 10 musicians who would, well, it was called 10 musicians who would actually kick your ass, which maybe, Woody, one day you can aspire to be on. I don't know if you still got the sort of boxing credentials to do it.
I'm probably good for about 10 seconds worth of combat now, sadly.
10 seconds isn't too bad. But yeah, okay, I think I sent the list round to you guys as well. There's some like funny people on it, like Madonna.
Wow.
Did karate.
Kylie as well, I think, was it? She was on like Street Fighter or something. Yeah, Willie Nelson's like a fucking black belt or darn.
Yeah. I feel like you'd have to catch Willie Nelson at the right time to do that though. Do you know what I mean? You're just going to be stoned out most of the time.
Stoned out. Yeah, curious.
I think you'd have to absolutely gun for Willie for him to actually like pull a move on you. I think that's how you'd have to get him to showcase his techers, is to actually just go for it.
Yeah. I feel like he's quite a peaceful guy, so yeah, you definitely have to summon the sort of demon from within.
I was quite surprised, Sean, actually, on the article, because it was like, there was like a lot of artists on there, but there was no like Oasis or like the Britpop people that would just put like a guitar over your head. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They don't have the kung fu boxing stuff, but like I wouldn't fancy myself against any of those lads. They're proper scrappers.
Yeah.
You know what I
mean? Yeah, true. It's like this seems it's all pure skill rather than just like reckless abandon. Yeah. Like swinging guitars and stuff.
Untamed aggression.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it was strange seeing Kylie Minogue in it, because so she's well trained in Taekwondo.
Wow.
And apparently this is what got her a role in Street Fighter, the movie. Do you remember, did you ever play the game Street Fighter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically there was a film made of it in 1994 with starring Jean-Claude Van Damme. And it's one of those cult classics because it's like a bad movie, but it's so bad it's good, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like Roadhouse or something.
Right, yeah. And there's quite a good video online that details everything. But apparently like Jean-Claude Van Damme was coked up the entire thing, and like
they
had like a year to do everything, you know. the idea for the movie was done in December 93, and they said this needs to be in theaters this time next year. So yeah, it was sort of one of those real thrown together sort of thing. They had quite a cool like hip-hop soundtrack with the movie. I mean, the movie was apparently quite successful at the time, but was just panned by the critics. And that's the sad thing. You don't really get movies like that anymore. You know, I doubt there's going to be too many underground cult, you know, classics that had massive budgets but just didn't really go anywhere in 20 years. Maybe there'd be like some weird YouTube shit or something. I don't know. But yeah, it's quite interesting. On the track list, you've got like Ice Cube, L, Cool J, Nas, like quite like some big hitters.
Yeah, they paid out for that soundtrack.
Yeah, it looks like it.
I need to watch this. It sounds like right up my street.
There's also like a Super Mario Brothers movie that flops as well. And nobody really knows about it. I didn't really know about it. And then I was like, there's Super Mario's movie. But it's like Danny DeVito and...
Oh my God.
Yeah, there's all these sort of game movies that I need to watch. And I feel like they still haven't ever actually done it right, the sort of game movie crossover. I'm not much of a gamer, but I know that there was like Assassin's Creed out a few years ago.
It's tough, I guess. Like, I personally love that stuff. I love a rubbish film.
Ooh.
But maybe I wouldn't like it if it didn't have a very big budget. I think that's it. It's glossy and you can see that they've invested in it, but it's shocking.
Yeah.
And I just always end up being like, I fucking wish I was like a DOP or something on this film. Like, just listening to the chatter going on, like, did he just see Van Damme do that? Is he drugged out again? Yeah. It's been like it all month. Like, just the kind of reality behind these films.
Yeah. It's like, I wish... Yeah, that's the thing. Being able to see like a behind-the-scenes featurette on that, I think that would be a true insight. I don't really know much about Jean-Claude Van Damme other than like the Coors Light advert.
Mm.
One of the other things I was thinking about with the sort of martial arts and musician crossover was on the last Kendrick Lamar tour, he had a character called Kung Fu Kenny. And I only found out literally yesterday that it was influenced by a buddy cop film from around 2000. Anybody got any guesses to what it was? Very famous film. So it's in Rush Hour 2, Don Cheadle plays this guy called Kenny, and he runs like this gambling thing at the back of this Chinese restaurant. And he was in the video for Damn. And apparently that's where it all came from. It sort of links up. And some people...
Crazy.
He had these... Basically, when he was doing the shows, he had these films playing, and somebody's tied them all up together on YouTube. So, and it's a really super strange film that's inspired by all these old karate movies. And it finds Kendrick looking for something called The Glow, which is like a metaphor for getting to the top of his rap game.
Oh. And
it's like this mystical power or something. And yeah, he had these Nike sneakers out called the Kenny Cortez 3. So he went quite deep on it and on this sort of, you know...
concept.
Other character that he brought up. Maybe that's something you can do on the next album, Woody. Some sort of boxing alter ego. I don't know what the name would be.
Or maybe I could be... Maybe I, like, if things don't go very well, I could somehow feature in someone else's concept and I'll be, like, the unsuspecting boxing guy.
What would you be called, Willy?
Probably be called Little Willy.
Like Bulldozer Bill.
Bill, yeah. Dirty Willy. Dirty Willy.
There's a lot to play with there.
Dirty Willy doesn't play by the rules. I could probably have like a little slogan. And...
Oh, yeah.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining us, mate. Real pleasure having you on. And, you know, best of luck. The album's out on the 7th, is that right?
Yeah, that's it.
I know you've announced some shows for next year, right?
Yeah, so we've got like we've moved our tour probably like, you know, so many others to next spring. The kind of span from the end of April to the start of May. So I'll be looking forward to that.
Brilliant. Awesome. I was going to say, you're going to be dipping your toe into the live stream gig world, or are you going to be staying away from that?
I guess we'll just see how it goes. Like I've been having this weird thing, and I'm not sure if it's just me, but at first I was well up for like film, you know, like doing what I could and filming myself playing tracks, and then after a couple of weeks it just got really like hard to do it. Like I was just getting really depressed about it.
Right.
Hopefully, you know, some more kind of like bigger sessions come in and stuff. We've got a couple of sessions booked, so yeah, it'd be nice to get playing with the band again and you know, not feel like I'm in my spare room pretending that I'm playing a show, but I'm sure there'll be lots of that on the way.
I'll do it at the Greengrocers or something.
Yeah, that's crossed my mind actually. I'll have to ask my boss.
On the second week of working.
Yeah, can you close the shop for a couple of days? I have this idea.
Also, I can't work all of next week.
Yeah.
Love it.
Oh, amazing.
And there we have it. Thank you so much to Woody J. Healy for coming through on this episode. Really awesome chat, and I hope you all enjoyed. We will be back in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, though, please hit us up on MEAT Pod on Instagram and Twitter, and make sure you purchase that Woody J. Healy record. It's a stunner. Thank you very much, guys. Keep safe.